America and to all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Chris Logie and Teresa Salmon. Say hi to the good folks, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah. So this episode is going to be for July 16th, 2022. And we are pretty much the very middle of summer now. It, of course, is hot and it's humid. And honestly, I cannot wait for fall to get here. I'm already past the point where I'm like, yep, the novelty has worn off. I want September and October to get here fast. But, yeah, so this week, things we'll be talking about. We got some legal and political shenanigans, as always, including one particular thing that is going to absolutely piss you off. There's just one particular story here that is just guaranteed to piss you off. I don't care who you are. We got some good news about the state of mental health in the United States. We got some science news from NASA. We also got some new stuff from the January 6th committee. We also have some news on that whole thing with the shortage of baby formula. If you remember, part of the reason that happened is because one particular factory had to close down. We'll get more on that particular story. And of course, as always, we got a bunch of entertainment stuff to talk about, including a teaser trailer for a new Lord of the Rings project. But before we get to all of that stuff, before we get to any of the meat of the stories and all that, we start us off, as we always do, talking about all the things we've been doing this week that led up to this moment. So, Chris, we're going to start with you, as always. What have you been doing this
week? It's not been a super interesting week. You know, otherwise, yeah, it's been all right. We're like a high of 80 today, so that's pretty nice. I think we're supposed to get some rain here tomorrow.
Yeah.
So hopefully keep it cool for a little bit, but I think it's supposed to go right back up for temperatures after that. So, yeah, that'll be a whole lot of fun. But
oh, yeah.
Yeah, managed to get to the theater to watch Thor Love and Thunder on Tuesday, which I enjoyed a good bit. It's not as good as Ragnarok was. Mostly because I think a lot of this story is just more of a story progression for Thor versus, you know, anything major that's going to change outside of like one character that is introduced. Maybe one that'll come back, I guess. But they introduce a character that is not in the comics, at least not with this origin story, so you'll have to watch it to see. But yeah, it's a good time, but it's not like anything I would say like Ragnarok was sort of a really good, probably the best of those Thor movies. And yeah, they've just been, this one kind of deals with how he's just been kind of listless since his relationship with Jane Foster kind of ended of sorts. And his various other bits of reasons to be kind of myopic, you know, feeling the brunt of the responsibility for Thanos winning after Infinity War and all that. So, yeah. And they kind of just run through a lot of the stuff that was in the trailers was the very first, like, 10-15 minutes. So there's not a ton from later in that movie. The other thing was the trailer for Nope they had before the movie seemed to just spoil everything.
Yeah.
Which is like, I guess that's a way to go, but that's unlike the way Jordan Peele movies tend to like to do things. So it's like, I don't know if it's a red herring or not.
Yeah. Then again, it's also completely possible that he's got something else in that movie that is where, like, all the other stuff is meant to throw you off. So,
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
But they throw a lot in there. I'm not going to spoil it. It's, mm-hmm. I think it's a trailer that's been out for a few weeks now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the first one for this one. So
mm.
if you want to avoid that, get into the theater like, you know, 10 minutes before it starts.
Mm-hmm.
Versus I got in like right as they were starting the trailers. So there's that. Watch some of the new stuff on Netflix. Dead End Paranormal Park that came out a few weeks ago. This is an animated show that mm-hmm. Features a trans boy and a, I think she's Indian girl.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really explain her origins too much, but I believe the voice actress behind her is Indian,
mm-hmm.
Indian American. So they both find this flyer to apply for a position at the local theme park, Dead End Paranormal Park.
Mm-hmm.
That is run by Pauline Phoenix, I think it's her name. A popular actress that the girl likes a lot, that has sort mm-hmm. of based her life around, I guess,
mm-hmm.
or obsessed about for all of her life. Mm-hmm. And they get there and find out, oh, this isn't for like a position at the park. This is for some demon to get a new body.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, and they manage to survive that whole ordeal and not get sucked into the get a demon to, you know, take over their body kind of thing. So they end up just becoming security at the park
mm-hmm.
Through some means or another. But they kind of just have some wacky hijinks of a spooky nature.
Mm-hmm.
There's one that's got a neat bit where they are going to have like a slumber party. For these kids, these 10-year-olds, including the one character's little brother,
mm-hmm.
and they get a visit from the night hag that steals their sleep, their yeah. entire lives' sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So that all these kids are running around like 10-year-olds that have never slept in their lives
mm.
to be like zombie-like, in a sense. So that's a whole weird bit, and there's others that go through. There's story going on as you go with this overall story. You know, there's characters that have different things going on. The trans boy has a crush on one of the other people that works at the park.
Mm-hmm.
And the girl is obsessed with, you know, the woman the whole thing is based on. I haven't been able to figure out, like, what her influence is, whether it's, like, a Scream Queen kind of, you know, actress or... if it's like an Elvira kind of a character, I don't know, but that whole stuff is a big part of it as they start unraveling parts of the mystery and what's all going on there. And it's only 10 episodes, but it does a great job of escalating things, especially when they get to a musical episode
mm-hmm.
that isn't just an episode with music. They're like a 25-minute musical. Pushing various characters' stories along and setting up for the finale in a really fun way that's just had me kind of coming back and just rewatching that one episode a few times. That's been a really fun part of it. And yeah, it's a very good show. It's not gory at all. It's, I think, rated for kids, like mm-hmm. Y7, something like that.
Yep.
So it's fairly friendly for kids, if they can handle just spooky stuff,
mm-hmm.
There's nothing too bad there. And there's a lot of fun bits there that makes it one of the more fun shows that Netflix has had in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully they get a second season. Yeah, I've heard people describe this as being similar to like a Gravity Falls style thing, but I've never seen that, so I don't necessarily get that reference. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there you go. That's a show to check out on Netflix.
Yeah.
And I also watched the Resident Evil show on Netflix, the series that I'm only 4 episodes in out of 8.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm about halfway, and I'm basically at the point where they start integrating more of the video game stuff into mm-hmm. the show, whereas the first few episodes are a lot of setup, a lot of, you know, bits with the sort of current timeline and the future timeline, as you're trying to figure out how things get from one to the other, you can figure it out when Umbrella is involved. Mm-hmm. But this is set essentially like after the first three Resident Evil games.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, they're in New Raccoon City. That is a corporate town front the Umbrella's running, you know, complete with a firewall that prevents people from accessing a lot of things that go outside of the town.
Mm-hmm.
Especially things that would maybe point out that Umbrella's not a great company. But yeah, I've just gotten two bits where they introduce a character that says, I'm the master of unlocking. a Resident Evil 4 thing with a dude with a burlap sack over his head and a chainsaw kind of thing. And, you know, various other bits like that, so that I'm like, okay, so this is kind of actually putting itself somewhere in the timeline for Resident Evil versus just being like its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
Though, still not 100% sure where it's all going because I'm still halfway through, so I'll keep watching and seeing sort of where this all goes. But it's neat so far. It's pretty solid. Let's see. So while I've been watching or playing Power Wash Simulator, I've been watching One Piece on Netflix as well. Started from the beginning with the English dub.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's good. I've already seen all this stuff, the setup here where, you know, Luffy is trying to set up his crew and all that. And, you know, he's gotten Usopp as his newest member. And then I figured out who that voice is, and it's Krillin, which is a perfect fit for that character because they're both, you know, guys who have a penchant for lying to try to get their way. Though Krillin uses it to lie his way into becoming a student of Master Roshi, and you know, try to become the favored student to kiss his ass and lie to Goku and all that. But that was pretty nice realization there. But yeah, still working my way through it. I'm like 20 episodes in so far, so that's been that. But for games, I've been playing a bunch of Power Wash Simulator now that has hit 1.0. Playing it on Steam and dealing with I just reset my progress so I can start over and sort of get it all through that and sort of see how the progression goes. Because, yeah, just playing it the way it was through Early Access, you just kind of play through everything that is new and then you're like, all right, I'm done for a while and come back later. And I could have just went and played the final four maps, the jobs they added for the 1.0 update, but I decided to just restart. And yeah, enjoying it a lot. They have achievements in the game now. A lot of standard ones, but a lot that are just here on this map. Here's one goal you should try. Like the first one's a van. It's like, hey, use this one nozzle to wash this van. And it's like it's a 0-degree nozzle, so it's just one straight, you know, burst of water, which is going to make it a lot tougher on a van where you're not getting any sort of spread there to kind of clean it off a little bit faster. But I guess that's part of the challenge there. So, yeah, been working my way through that. I am probably about a third of the way through the campaign so far. Look forward to put more time into that. And the other game I've been playing, I streamed this today, Escape Academy.
Yeah.
A game that is made by people that made escape games. Room escape games kind of stuff that, you know, when the pandemic hit, there's suddenly not a market for that anymore. At least not in the way it was before. So they pivoted to making a game about escape rooms for where you kind of start off doing this really kind of shitty, low-budget escape room that, you know, you see a note that's, like, highlighting certain words. Say, like, hey, take a look at the clock and figure out the code. And then you go look at the clock, and it's got a note on it saying, sorry, the clock is busted. Here's the code. Kind of thing, really shitty kind of thing. You know, and you look in the treasure chest and it's just a box. It's like, yeah, we ran out of budget. Can get you a treasure chest, so pretend this is one kind of thing. But then you go back out of the room once you solve everything, and then nobody's in there. And so then it turns into another puzzle as you start figuring out there's something going on here. There's some other puzzle that leads you to finding out that you're being recruited for this escape academy as like a, I don't know, as like a Harry Potter for escape rooms, I guess. And, you know, no turfs as far as I can tell. So it's at least much better than Harry Potter in that way. So, and you get there and it's like, oh, you know, the headmaster has you do this one to get into the academy that's just in her office. And it's like, oh, you got to figure out her name using the clues in this room kind of thing. And you get a lock. It's like, oh, the code is how many of this and this and this items are in this room kind of thing. And nothing that's terribly too hard. And if it is hard, you can hit a hint button to give you a hint. Mm-hmm. Though I don't like the way they do it where you hit the button and that counts as getting a hint. Mm-hmm. Even if you know, accidentally hit the button or something like that, there's no way to be like, hit the button and confirm that you want to use a hint. Mm-hmm. So I've had a few, like after you finish one, it's like, oh, this is how much time you took, how many hints you used in that, and here's your rating. But luckily they don't punish you too much. Because I've been getting like A pluses for not using a hint and A's for accidentally using one. Mm-hmm. So it's not too punishing. But yeah, you're kind of just going through, collecting. You get like a piece of a puzzle as you go through your different, you know, classes that are escape rooms in themselves. And they got some good puzzles in there for that stuff. Especially because they, you know, have it as a video game. They don't have to actually build some of these elaborate puzzles and all that. So it's a good game. It's on Game Pass. Worth checking out. Same for Power Wash Simulator. So that's been pretty much it for me. So how about you, Brandon? Or how about you, Teresa?
Yeah, Teresa, what have you been doing this week?
So we bought like a rash of new PS5 games, but really the only one that I've been playing so far is Tiny Tina's Wonderland. So we've only played a couple hours so far. I think it's a follow-up to Borderlands or like a side step from Borderlands.
Kind of.
Yeah. So it really has that. It has a lot of the same mechanics in the way, or at least compared to like way back when I played Borderlands 2, which is quite a long time ago. And I do enjoy that it has up to 4-player couch co-op. So we've definitely done the 3-player thing. So, done a little bit of that. Looks pretty good, too, which, you know, I guess you would expect. The voice acting kind of gets on my nerves a little bit, but that's just, like, I guess my own problem. I don't know. I'll get past. Still playing a little bit of Final Fantasy XIV. Probably play a lot more this weekend and next week. I played a lot of Civ Revolution 2 because I was on a plane. We went out to LA again. And, you know, it's a 4-hour, maybe 20-minute flight from here. It's a little over 4 hours. So it's enough time to get my ass kicked trying to play Emperor. I did that a lot. And, boy, that game is old. Yeah. I mean... We knew it was old, but jeez, that game is old. They really need to do another strategy one like that that's a little less than Civ 6, which of course still plays on the iPad too, because I brought my iPad with. That was the only thing I brought. We finished up Righteous Gemstones. I don't know if we had started it last time I was on the podcast, but it's Danny McBride's thing that he did a couple years ago, I think before the pandemic. Although they started talking about the pandemic during it. So maybe it was, I know it started in 2019. So like the second season was probably 2020, 2021 or something. Yeah. And how was that so good? I thought it was just going to be some little shit show comedy type thing. I was absolutely blown away. I had no idea that it was going to be like it was. I think it wrapped up a little bit too neatly, though. But yeah, that was great. Eric Andre was in it. He was hysterical. There was actually a lot of little bit pieces in there that were grand. But for the most part, what I did last week was be in LA. So we went up to Topanga National Park, and that's up in like the Santa Monica Mountains. And you guys know I'm a plains girl, right? All flat. The only hills I encounter are around the river towns. That was something to drive in. Yeah, I have driven in the Rockies before, a long, long time ago. But holy shit, we must have taken the local road up. And it was, I mean, around every turn, you did not know what was coming. And a lot of the times I was going like 10, 15 miles per hour getting up those mountains. Because I had no idea what was coming around the turn. I don't know if it was going to be a super sharp hairpin turn or a bunch of S curves, or, but it was gorgeous. It was hot as shit up there. but that was amazing. And when we came back down, we clearly took the more well-traveled path, because it was a breeze to come back down, which was a relief. Because that was a hard drive, man. I got to tell you, my deodorant was working double time on that shit. It was something. The next day we did Disneyland, which is the first time my kid and I have ever been. And we were there for what they call a rope drop. That's when they finally let you in. So we got up at like 5:30 in the freaking morning, which was 7:30 our time. So not so bad for us, right? And got through parking, got through security, got into the park, and we were just sitting there waiting for like 10 minutes before they finally let us out and out to Rome. And of course, we went straight to the Star Wars area. We went to Empire's Edge. And we stayed there until after lunchtime. So we were there for like 5 hours in the Star Wars area. And it was like, it was incredible. And when they say that Disney is magical, we didn't expect to get much out of it. And I was kind of like, oh, our kid's kind of almost too old to do. Nah, man, you're never too old for this. Nope. Never too old. So we had a blast. We stayed until after 10 o'clock at night. I walked 30,000 fucking steps that day. And I honestly don't know how I got back to the car, but yeah, we did. And I can't even fathom how much, and we did the park hopper. So there's like California Adventure Park right next door. Mm-hmm. And so we went over there and we saw that character from Thor, Brandon, that you Chris, that you mentioned. That character was walking around with Thor, and I'm like, who the fuck is this? Because I didn't watch any of the trailers. I'm like, who is this? What is going on here? So yeah, that makes sense now. But we did see a good number of the actors and everything, the character actors. What did we do? We did one of the rides. The first ride we did over there was, and most of that stuff was like Pixar related. So they had like Radiator Springs that you could walk down that looked just like out of the Cars movie. We did the Guardians of the Galaxy ride. And if I had known what it was, I would have cinched up that seatbelt a little bit more. So I felt so bad for the guy that sat next to me and my kid, because we were shrieking. It wasn't screaming. We were shrieking. We didn't expect that, but it was fucking great. So we went on a lot of rides over there. We had a great time. And the very next goddamn day, and we didn't get back to Santa Monica Beach, because we stayed right on the beach in Santa Monica. So we didn't get back there until like 1 in the morning, which was 3 in the morning our time. And the next goddamn day, we were out at Universal. No break in between. And met one of the podcasting people that we've done with Pat Mifflin's retro gaming podcast, and spent the day with her. And that was really cool to meet another, another gaming person in person. Because so far, the only one that I've met in person is Dan Reb. So that was neat. Had a ton of fun, and then we came home. Mm-hmm. And then I don't remember what happened after that, because I came home and I slept like 9 straight hours. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was amazing. Really loved it. And I kind of think I want to do Disney World. So that's a lot, but that's what I did in the past week. Mm. What about you, Brandon?
And speaking of the thing about Disney is, yeah, it's the thing about Disney, and I've never been to Disneyland, but I can especially say this about Disney World, is the reason you keep coming back to it is because when you get older, you find other things to interest you about the place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things that you didn't know about when you were a kid, and suddenly now you can actually, like, pick it out. Like, you know, like when I was a kid, I had no interest in the World Pavilion. That's, like, mm-hmm. in the same place where Epcot is. When we went back, when I was in my 20s, the World Pavilion was the very first place we went. Because I wanted to go to the Japanese part.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is, they had like a store there that was more or less, controlled and fully stocked by Ghibli Studios. So, oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just don't go during the summer.
Yeah, we went during, like, April. And remember, this is Orlando, Florida, we're talking about, so...
It's gotta be hot still.
Yeah, it's gonna be hot still.
Humid and rainy most days.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah.
So yeah, you wanna go, like, fall or early part of the year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, just, like, take some time off school and go. Who cares what you miss?
Mm-hmm. And also go to other things, too. There's a lot in Orlando.
Oh, yeah. Orlando's got a lot of great stuff. Like, outside of the fact that, you know, it has an awful governor, Florida's pretty happening place to be. Mm-hmm. Most of the people you meet there tend to be pretty laid back. And, you know, there's the beaches and everything. You got that nice sea breeze always coming. And, you know, just don't drink the tap water.
Yeah.
Not because it's poison or anything, but because, you know, it's Florida.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, go to things that are cheaper than Disney World.
Yeah, there are other places there, too. Including Universal Studios. Yeah, that's there as well. So, as for games, I finished Skyrim and put that aside, so I had some... What?
How does one finish Skyrim?
Well, by finish Skyrim, I mean I finished all the main campaign and the DLC stuff. There's still plenty to do, but, you know, I'd gotten to the point where I was like, yeah, I want to move on to something else for a while. And I'd been on kind of a horror kick lately, so I decided I'd use my Game Pass subscription. I downloaded The Evil Within. Now, for those who don't remember, this was a game that was released as like it was like a launch title for the Xbox One. It was put out by Tango Gameworks, and it's by the same guy who created the Resident Evil franchise, and It's actually really good. I quite enjoy it. My only problem, though, is that the guy that you play as, he just doesn't emote properly. You know, he emotes the same way like some grizzled action hero does when it's like, you know, this is not a grizzled action hero game. This is very much a very disturbing survival horror game where you are constantly confronted with some pretty terrifying and gruesome imagery. And this guy's acting like it's freaking, you know, like this is Uncharted or something. It's, yeah. Also the game has, like, it's extremely kind of random. Because basically the whole game starts is where it's you, this guy named Sebastian, who's like a detective, and your partner, and like a rookie who recently, I don't think she's a rookie, but she recently joined on to your little task force, and you're being driven to like this mental hospital. And then when you walk in, you discover that there's just a ton of blood and dead people everywhere. And then you go to the security room to find out what the hell happened, play about security cameras, and then you start seeing this dude that's like teleporting everywhere and just straight up murdering people, like at the drop of a hat. And then he appears right behind you and knocks you out, and then you wake up in what looks like some kind of, at first looks like you're like in the den of like some serial killer's thing, like you're hung upside down on a meat hook like you're in an abattoir or whatever. But then you actually get out of it and you start to realize, wow, this is not the place I originally walked into. And I have some, like, some theories about what's going on. I won't say anything for sure until I've actually finished the game. I'm about midway through it right now, but, you know, the game's good. Just, you know, the voice acting for the protagonist could be better, I suppose. It plays like it plays very much kind of like a more stealthier version of Resident Evil 4. I've been playing that, and much also like Chris, I finally got to play Power Wash Simulator because that's on Game Pass now too. And of course, unlike Chris, this is my first time being able to play it. I totally get it. I get why people love this game so much. It really is just this incredible thing where it's like, you know, it's literally just you and you've got a job, you got an area, you got a power washer, and you got to clean it. And that's pretty much it. And for whatever,
I see the appeal.
Yeah. It's very simple and straightforward. And if you're like incredibly freaking like obsessive compulsive, it's like the perfect game. Because that game makes sure you try and get every single area clean before you can complete it. And of course, if you're ADHD, then you can basically just bounce around to various areas, you know, at will. Just in general, it's a very, very fun game. Even though you would think it's like power washing, you're like, have you ever actually done like real life power washing before?
No.
Only once.
Yeah, it's actually kind of tedious.
Yeah, it hurts your hands, your arms, your wrists. It's like,
imagine
it.
It's like a leaf blower of sorts.
Kind of like
power.
That. Yeah, it's got like,
as far as the thing that will physically wear you out.
Yeah, because it's constantly vibrating in your hand. It's a lot. It's similar to like, you know, using like a weed whacker or whatever. You know,
yeah, that too.
A stream cutter, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. But yeah, here it's just like, it's very straightforward and you don't have to deal with all that. And you can get all the pleasure and enjoyment of that sort of a completionist aspect of it without having to deal with, you know, the constant hand pain.
Yeah.
What maps have you done?
I've done the first one, I've done the van, and I finished the backyard last night, yeah.
Where you get the weird texts like, oh, the girls can't wait to get out there.
Yeah.
Like, are you guys just watching this weirdo just wandering around your backyard, randomly washing stuff, jumping on top of your shed? Because, you have to, it's not realistic in any way.
No, it's not.
Because you get to a point where you're washing like in like a really old car from a movie, and you're like, you're not gonna power wash a car with
no.
a power wash, like especially an old car where you're like jumping on top of the cloth roof and all this stuff.
Especially with the pressure that's coming off a power washer, you put holes in that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, especially when it's got rust all over, and it's like, yep, this is how you take care of rust. You just power wash it away, and it's perfectly fine under it.
Be like a Chicago car with big old holes in the freaking floorboard.
Yeah.
But yeah, pay attention to those messages you get, not in those early ones, but you'll start noticing like, oh, they mention, you know, this character, and then they'll contact you later. like, I got a job for you. Mm-hmm. There's a park warden that just tells you, like, we should have used this for this material for this playground. Unfortunately, it's toxic to humans. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this kind of shit where it's like, this town is just full of crazy people.
Yeah. It comes with living next to a volcano, I guess. But yeah, so yeah, I've been playing that and enjoying it quite a bit. Also, the usual reading, nothing much to add there. Just, you know, I told you about that collection of theatrical plays that Clive Barker wrote that I managed to get a hold of. He's got another one in there that's called Colossus, and it's basically about a fictional... It's okay, so I think I actually did like a random factoid about this year sometime back. The artist Francisco de Goya, he famously did what are sometimes called the Black Paintings, which are this series of basically murals that he painted on the inside of this huge mansion. One of the probably the most famous is the one that has I think it's what's his name? It's one of the Titans eating his children. Basically the play is about like during the sort of civil war that went down in Spain during the 1800s, and Goya is there working on a portrait for someone, and then the mansion gets hit by a cannonball, and it basically just sends the whole thing down, you know, collapses the whole house, and the house and the play is basically about all the people inside the house who are, you know, waking up and just sort of in shock in the rubble, trying to collect all the property that they can still get a hold of. And Goya's just sort of in the background because he snuck off earlier, and he's basically trying to hide from the actual people who are his employers, because as it turns out, they're fucking insane. Yeah, it's just stuff like that. And then, also music as well. I started listening to, the first album that Cheap Trick put out way back in the late 70s, before they hit it big. And it's actually really good. Cause it's surprisingly enough, their songs, especially on that first album, are extremely dark. Like, you would not expect, like, they have one song that's literally about a dude, an old dude who likes to hang around outside of high schools because he likes young girls. Or the one about a dude who ends up going on a murder spree. Just really dark shit.
He's
like
great.
That. Yeah. Keep in mind, this is the same band that had, you know, I Want You to Want Me and Surrender and, you know, songs like that, you know, happy pop rock songs. And then you're like, wow, this shit's pretty dark. They had one song on there. It's called Oh Candy. That's literally about one of their roadies who committed suicide. Wow. It's like, yeah.
That's dark-ish. Yeah.
But the album's actually really good. It's also actually, unlike a lot of their future albums, the production was like fairly raw, so it doesn't sound as kind of schlocky as like some of their other albums from the 70s did. Remember, they didn't really become really famous until Live at the Budokan came out, and like that album just exploded in popularity. So, you know, up to that point, they hadn't been able to like sort of implement the kind of raw, heavy sound that they had live until that album came out. And pretty much when that album came out, like, the record label had to struggle to, like, get new copies of their catalog out into record stores, because once that album took off, people started gobbling up their other albums in droves. But, yeah, so that's pretty much what I have been doing. We want to add anything else before we move on?
Nah.
Okay. Well then, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And so back when we were in school, you know, high school, I think we probably didn't really go like into like really directly like in detail of what their philosophies were. But when we were in high school, we learned about figures like Plato and Aristotle and Socrates, you know, stuff like that. How we didn't go too thick into their ideology, you know, their philosophy and stuff, but, you know, sort of short showed the whole idea of like, you know, how, you know, their ideas are sort of a major sort of part foundation of Western culture. You know, sort of in the way that, you know, Plato had his Republic, Socrates had his whole concept of, you know, the Socratic dialogue, Aristotle, you know, of course, was taught by Plato, and stuff like that. And the way that they were usually portrayed in high school, they were usually given a kind of stodgy sort of stodgy air about them, like these noble, stoic, high-minded philosophers. They never, of course, brought up the fact that Socrates was into little boys, or that, you know, all the other stuff that was a little, stuff like that. You know, it's always, you know, Socrates, you know, nobly going to his death, you know, by, you know, drinking poison, or, you know, Plato talking about his Republic and the nature of forms and stuff like that. But I'm actually not going to talk about any of those guys. I'm going to talk about a contemporary of one of them. Probably the guy who has sort of become my personal favorite of all the classical Greek philosophers. Mostly because he was the one dude who, of all of them, could look at bullshit and call it out for what it was. And this man was, he was just a character. His name was Diogenes. Diogenes was a famous philosopher of what is called the Cynic school. Now, the Cynics essentially believe that one should live life in virtue, in agreement with nature, that reasoning creatures, people could gain happiness by rigorous training and by living in a way which is natural for themselves, rejecting all conventional desires for wealth, power, and fame, and even flouting conventions openly and derisively in public. And holy shit, that was Diogenes to a T. So just a little bit about who Diogenes was. Diogenes was allegedly from Sinope, which was an Ionian colony on the Black Sea. And supposedly he fled there for, the rumor had it, it was because of debasement of currency. His dad was a mint master. And it's not really known if he himself did it, or he did it with his father, or it was his father who did it and just put the blame on him. Either way, he had to flee Sinope, and eventually he made his way to Athens. And Diogenes was known for a couple of different things. I talked about the whole Cynic lifestyle, the idea that you should forego all vapid luxuries and live in accordance with nature. Well, Diogenes essentially did that by basically trying to restrict the absolute amount of any kind of property he ever owned or held at any given time. He famously, in order to live, he famously took a enormous tub, like a bathing tub, and he turned it on its side and he set it up against the wall at the in the middle of the marketplace in Athens. And he basically made this his domicile. He filled it with hay so that he could sleep in it. He famously had no clothing except a piece of ragged cloth that he kept tied around his waist. For a while, he had a walking stick that he would use. And other than that, the one thing he had as like a possession was a clay bowl he would use for drinking. Until he saw a poor street urchin boy use the cup of his hand, you know, to get a drink of water out of a puddle. And he said, well, that's just me and my vanity. And he broke the bowl and decided, well, you know, that's just how I will live. He was extremely aesthetic, almost to a fault. And he would famously go around, he didn't bathe, obviously, as you could probably guess. So he stank to high heaven. He would regularly urinate against the wall next to his little tub. He would also just crap in public out in the middle of the street. And it wasn't unusual for people to be walking by next to his tub and see him getting the old strokey lokey underneath his cloth. Because, see, to him, all the other stuff was just vain, you know, vain stuff that was constructed by humans to make us seem like less than natural creatures than we actually are. When one of the, he was famously attracted to the teachings of a man named Aristophanes, who was a student of Socrates. And when Diogenes asked him to mentor him, he ignored him and reportedly eventually beat him off with his staff. Diogenes in turn supposedly responded, "Strike, for you will find no wood hot enough to keep me away from you so long as I think you've something to say." And eventually he did become his pupil, and despite the just extreme brutality that he received from this philosopher, he ended up surpassing his master in reputation. The stories told about this man go sort of like this. He, like I said, he inured himself to the weather by living in a tub or clay jar belonging to a temple of Cybele. He destroyed the single wooden bowl he possessed on seeing a peasant boy drink from the hollow of his hands. He would eat within the marketplace, which was against the customs of Athens at the time. He said, "Well, I mean, I was hungry, so why not? Because, you know, I'm only hungry when I'm in the market. Why not eat there?" He used to stroll about in full daylight with a lit lantern. When asked what he was doing, he would answer, "I am looking for an honest man." Because to him, the unreasoning behavior of the people around him meant that they did not qualify as men. He said he constantly looked for an honest man, but could never find anything but rascals and scoundrels. And then one of the most famous things he did was when Plato was giving a lecture, he supposedly, in tongue-in-cheek, said that the definition of man was, quote, as a featherless biped. So Diogenes found a chicken, plucked it of all its feathers, brought it to Plato's academy, and said, "Behold, I have brought you a man." And so the academy, yeah, and so the academy added, quote, "with broad flat nails" to the definition. He would also, like I said, also he would supposedly spit, urinate on people, break wind, and just masturbate in public. At one point, he was captured by pirates and was brought to Corinth, and he was sold as a slave to a Corinthian Xenaetas. When he was asked his trade, he replied that he knew no trade but that of governing men, and that he wished to be sold to a man who needed a master. The guy who bought him was like, "Ah, you know what? Maybe this guy actually has something to go with." So he said, "I'm going to ask this man to tutor my children."
Oh my God.
Now, before you're thinking, "Oh my God," no, he actually did really well. Supposedly he, spent the rest of his life in Corinth, and he devoted to preaching the doctrines of virtuous self-control to these children. And apparently it worked. He eventually was set free because he was a, quote, cherished member of the household. While others say he was set free almost immediately, and others still states that he grew old and died at his house in Corinth. Nobody really knows for sure. He was said to have lectured to large audiences at the Isthmian Games. Supposedly, he even brought up, you know, redid his whole thing of living in a jar to a gymnasium in Corinth, where he put another jar there and in it. Probably the one thing about him that's other than that, that's probably made the biggest historical thing about him, is that he ended up meeting Alexander the Great. And it was while he was an old man living in Corinth. Now, these stories are apocryphal, but mostly they go like this, and they're largely sourced to guys like Plutarch. It wasn't a very long conversation. It was mostly just some quick words. Basically, Diogenes was out of his jar, and he was lying down in the gymnasium, you know, relaxing in the morning sunlight. And then Alexander is told by someone that is Diogenes, the famous cynic. And Alexander, of course, is like, "Oh, a famous philosopher. Maybe I should talk to him." And he asked if there was any favor he might do for him. And Diogenes said, and Diogenes replied, "Yes, sir, please stand out of my sunlight." basically translates to, "Yes, sir, you can get out of my sunlight." Alexander then declared, "If I were not Alexander, I wish to be Diogenes." And Diogenes replied in turn, "If I were not Diogenes, I would still wish to be Diogenes." There's another account of this conversation where the Alexander found the philosopher looking attentively at a pile of human bones. He explained, and Diogenes in turn explained, "I am searching for the bones of your father, but cannot distinguish them from those of a slave." Because the idea is he's like, you know, he's pointing out, you know, Alexander, me and you, we're really no different. It's just that you're a man of rank and I am born a peasant, but a pauper out in the middle of the streets. Now, exactly how he died and where he died is still a matter of debate. His contemporaries once jokingly alleged that he just held his breath one day until he expired because he just simply become tired of living. Another said that he became sick because he ate a raw octopus, or that he had suffered an infected dog bite. When he was asked once, like, if he died, how would he wish to be buried? He said, "Leave my body outside of the city wall so wild animals could feast on my body." When asked if he minded this, he said, not at all, as long as you provide me with a stick to chase the creatures away. When asked how he could use the stick since he would lack awareness, he replied, "If I lack awareness, then why should I care what happens to me when I am dead?" Literally to the end, he made fun of people's excessive concern with the proper treatment of the dead. And to all of this, the Corinthians erected to his memory a pillar on which rested a dog of Parian marble. Because for whatever reason, Diogenes was always shown as being like dog-like or living like a dog. Because, you know, he lived out on a street like a stray dog, you know, rarely bathing and all that stuff. So, yes, that is Diogenes, one of the founders of Cynicism. And like all the great cynics, he basically taught by living by example, by trying to show people you don't need all of these vain luxuries to live a good and virtuous life. You just simply need to live as I do. And Diogenes was that pretty much to the very end. And that was Diogenes. And that was the story of the great cynic philosopher, and that was yet another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid. I am leaving a lot out of that story, by the way. If you ever really want to go seriously in Diogenes as an individual, just look him up, because he was very much a character. And the fact that he was an actual person is what just makes it all the better. But yeah, okay, so moving on from there, it is now time to start the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we start off with the assholes of the week. And our first asshole of the week is the governor of Arizona, Doug Ducey, who signed a bill into law limiting the ability for citizens to record police within 8 feet without their permission.
Yeah, that's a hell of a thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, within 8 feet, so... Mm-hmm. Likely most of the recording that people do is, you know, a good bit further away than that.
Mm-hmm.
But this, you know, really restricts what the First Amendment can do. So I would not be surprised if this ends up getting shot down at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Through federal courts. But yeah, it's basically just a way to let the cops do whatever the fuck they want. And,
mm-hmm.
and with the way that this is, you know, the cop just walks at the person that has their camera out, mm-hmm. their phone out,
yep,
and just forces them to stop recording, or else they get arrested. And it's to keep people from recording these cops,
mm-hmm.
because apparently they do have something to hide.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a good look.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently also does not make exceptions for the press as well. So
yeah,
there you go.
Mm-hmm. They call it creeping fascism for a reason.
Yeah.
But anyway, that wasn't the only asshole of the week we had. We also had the Buffalo shooter, because he was indicted on federal hate crime charges this week. For very obvious reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just opened up that store again.
Mm-hmm.
Which had a lot of mixed emotions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being the site of a horrible thing that happened.
Mm-hmm.
But also being necessary because that area is a food desert for the community there.
Mm-hmm.
So they definitely need something there. So, but yeah, now he's facing 27 counts.
Yep.
10 hate crimes resulting in death, 3 counts of hate crimes involving an attempt to kill, along with 13 counts of using, carrying, or discharging a firearm.
Mm-hmm.
So he's probably going to be in prison the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Probably without parole as well. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and finally, and this story that's going to piss a lot of people off because it sure did piss me off. A Columbus man has been charged for the rape of a 10-year-old girl who then got pregnant, could not get an abortion in Ohio, and had to go all the way to Indiana to get the abortion. GOP intern and its media look even worse for their smear campaign to try and claim that the girl never existed. She did exist. The man was arrested. They have it on file.
Yeah, but this was before this came out. This was the thing that was like, oh, you guys have been spending the past few days trying to discredit this story because it came out of the Indianapolis Star on July 1st.
Mm-hmm.
That a 10-year-old girl who was raped and impregnated had been forced to travel to Ohio or from Ohio to Indiana to receive an abortion.
Yep.
Because she had been like 6 weeks and 3 days, so past mm-hmm. the point that abortions are banned.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, could not get one legally done here.
Mm.
I was like, oh, this is awful, especially in the wake of Roe v. Wade being turned, overturned. And yeah, the right went into trying to deal with this, which included like an editorial was published in the Wall Street Journal, calling that original report a fanciful tale that was too good to confirm.
Mm.
Some of these papers, these publications that are trying to do, you know,
mm-hmm.
Fact-checking stuff, like, this is one maybe should have waited.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you look like a complete shithead.
Yeah.
Ignoring
the doctor. So do the attorney generals involved.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is all predicated on a doctor's firsthand report on what they had dealt with in this scenario.
And yes, they did report it. I want to make that clear.
The parents reported the rape.
Yeah,
the doctor reported the abortion in Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
So everything was on the up and up, just nobody everything was able to locate these files.
Yeah.
So you had the Wall Street Journal doing this, criticizing the doctor for not providing details that could expose the identity of the 10-year-old, including where the alleged crime occurred. And it's like, you don't need to know that to know that this is true.
Yeah, you can't do that. And then the attorney generals are on a witch hunt after this doctor who was helping this poor child. Child.
Yeah. Like 10-year-old girl. We need to emphasize that. A 10-year-old girl is not in any way fit to labor and birth a child. Their bodies are not physically able to withstand that kind of trauma without some very extreme scars.
If and you know not, why that they didn't publicize this? Because like that's a thing that, and her parents would not want to turn into a media circus.
Yeah,
this is like a third or fourth grade little baby. They fucking can't.
And then it gets worse when you get the just absolute fucking tone deaf response of the anti-choicers at the National Right to Life Committee, where. Uh-huh. There's the one guy who's like, well, we would have hoped that if she would have the child and understand the burden that all women have to. She's 10.
She's a baby. Jeez.
She's still playing with Barbie dolls.
Yeah.
She's, you know.
Not even close to being done with that.
Yeah. And then you had that one.
She doesn't even know how to multiply yet by all. Well, maybe not long division. Come on, you guys.
And then you had that cunt who decided to go before a senator or representative committee and trying to claim that, you know, terminating this girl's pregnancy didn't qualify as an abortion. So therefore, it didn't qualify under the so-called guidelines that they give.
Yeah.
As a medical coder, I can tell you that anything that terminates a pregnancy is medically considered an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
From my own professional experience, I can tell you that that qualifies as an abortion. And we even have separate codes specifically to point out which kind, elective or spontaneous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because guess what? A miscarriage is considered an abortion.
Yeah.
Yeah, you might have to perform an additional abortion if it does not come out.
Yeah.
Right, that's when they do a DNC.
Oh, yeah.
And then that has to happen.
Yeah, and then there's also a procedure. You may have heard of it by another name. It's a procedure called intact dilation and extraction. Do you know what that is?
Yeah.
That's what these assholes like to call partial birth abortion or late-term abortion.
It's not. It's just that it's so fucking small that it can basically be sucked right out in one piece.
Or it's so unbelievably deformed that if it's born, it will kill the mother.
Oh yeah, that too.
Like, absolutely. And it's always done. It's all, I don't want to say always 100%, but this infinitesimally, the chance of it not being wanted is infinitesimally small, but it's almost mm-hmm. always done on wanted pregnancies that at the 11th hour proved to be medically problematic, fatal. If not fatal to the mother.
Mm-hmm.
And these fuckers decided to try and turn it into their little pet cause.
And it's backfired, you know, when you got the Attorney General for Ohio, Dave Yost, who is now a well-known person thanks to this.
Yeah.
So congrats on mm-hmm. making that your way that you've become a mm-hmm. national figure, you know, going on Fox News, telling Jesse Waters, saying we have regular contact with prosecutors and local police and sheriffs, not a whisper anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I did a subsequent interview with USA Today, said there was not a damn scintilla of evidence to support the story, which he described as a likely fabrication.
Yeah.
And Waters himself concluded the story fits a pretty dangerous pattern of politically timed disinformation. It's like, oh, that's you. You must be an expert in that, then.
Yeah.
But yeah, then DeWine spoke up at times, usually trying to minimize any definitive statements on it, but came back, you know, afterwards, being like, "Yeah, I'm glad we can put this person, you know, away for good." It's like, yeah, maybe, but
yeah.
You know, but then guess who else showed up? Jim Jordan quote tweeting a Washington Examiner tweet about this, about the Dave Yost thing, and saying, another lie. Anyone surprised? That's the day before, and then he just mysteriously deleted the tweet.
Huh.
And never, apologized or anything. You know, these guys do not apologize for any mistakes. They just move on. It says here, he quickly pivoted to tweeting stories about Joe Biden's breakfast taco statement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pivoting from a 10-year-old girl's rape to breakfast tacos is a good pivot there. But yeah, the New York Post posted a story titled Activist Tale of a 10-year-old Rape Victim's Abortion Looks Like a Lie, and quietly changed the title to The 10-year-old Rape Victim's Abortion Leaves a Number of Glaring Questions.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that has not been updated to reflect that the doctor's story was actually true.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Washington Post had their fact-checking story from Glenn Kessler that basically came to the conclusion of like, there's not enough evidence to, you know, say one way or the other. But if, you know, facts come out, then yeah, then it's true. It's like, then why are you publishing this thing if you don't mm-hmm. have, you know, definitive one way or the other? It's like, wait for the facts to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, you know, went on Twitter just whining at people criticizing him. So, you know.
I mean, if he had children, any fucking journalistic integrity, nobody would be.
Yeah.
But
yeah, then like did a quick edit to not really change much. Let's see. As a spot check, we contacted child service agencies in some of Ohio's most populous cities, including Cleveland, Columbus, Cincinnati, Dayton, and Toledo. None of the officials we reached were aware of such case in their areas.
They're...
Which is like...
They can't!
Yeah, it's,
I mean,
it's like...
isn't that correct?
Luckily, I don't know the details of that kind of stuff, so...
Yeah, right?
But, yeah, this is... It's like, we contacted 5 cities, child services agencies. That should be enough.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, cool. So, yeah, it's egg on all these people's faces.
Mm-hmm.
For flatly going so far, so hard on disinformation, discrediting this story that when, you know, they arrest the guy, that should be a huge backlash on them.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be. It'll be part of the abortion backlash of like, see, these people aren't doing it because it's the supposed right thing. They're doing this because they want to punish women.
Yeah.
And hope it's, you know, the promiscuous ones die from it.
Yeah.
Because that's one less, you know, liberal to vote.
Mm-hmm.
That mm-hmm. kind of thing. And I was like, oh, if this girl died in childbirth, then so be it. She shouldn't have gotten raped. And it's like, yeah, congratulations on being huge assholes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Are we now living in, like, the crazy ISIS areas? Because that sounds like that kind of shit. It really does, doesn't it?
Yeah,
blaming the victim to that fucking degree.
Yeah, it's like if this were a normal country, all these people would have had to resign their jobs, their positions, yeah. All of it. But no,
I don't know,
they get
you
to
guys.
Just keep going
mm-hmm.
and keep spewing their shit and getting yep. paid and getting richer and richer by the day for doing so. What is going on here?
Mm.
I just don't know. I have no answers.
Mm. All right. Okay. Well, fortunately, it's not all terrible. We do have some heroes of the week to talk about. The first is Paul Rudd. Paul Rudd befriended a 12-year-old boy whose yearbook had no signatures after months of bullying.
Yeah. He had signatures of 2 teachers and 2 classmates, so not necessarily 0, but much less than people he asked to sign.
Mm.
And then ended up signing his own yearbook with a note to himself. Hope you make some more friends. And his mom was, you know, very annoyed by this situation because she knew that he had been bullied for most of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, had, you know, spoken out about this on her social media, especially then when she posted on her Facebook. Yeah, she started with the parents' Facebook group for the school,
mm-hmm.
Then posted on her Facebook page itself,
mm.
Then got a lot of attention out of that. You know, celebrities, companies, parents and kids from around the world showed support for all of that, but it was when Paul Rudd got in contact with them, you know, as Ant-Man fame there, mm. managed to... talk to Brody here
mm-hmm.
Through FaceTime to talk to him about this, send him a note, handwritten note afterwards. And he is one of those capital handwritten people who writes mm-hmm. only in capitals.
Really?
But yeah, you can see the notes in the article. But yeah, he even sent him, you know, the Ant-Man helmet replica with a note on it for him. All this kind of stuff, and I think they are sort of text buddies now.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of thing. But yeah, the mom is in talk with nonprofits and work on anti-bullying initiatives, continue spreading the message of kindness and empathy. But yeah, when Brody got back to school, a lot of older students decided to visit his class.
Mm-hmm.
So high schoolers and other upperclassmen decided to visit and hang out with him, and I assume sign his book and all that. So. Mm.
That's cool.
Hopefully make it better for him. And so you can see like what the ways they treat other people can do to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because they probably all have their own things they don't share with others.
Mm.
Where I was like, yeah, the shit you do, even if you think it's joke or whatever, doesn't always get
it's
received
not.
As joke.
Yeah.
Mm.
True.
Yeah. True. But yeah.
All right. And also good news for a lot of people who haven't noticed, who don't know, The United States has a serious mental health issue. And we have for many decades, and it's only really, really recently that we've started to really take it seriously. And we have gone one small step forward in that, because this week the U.S. now has a new mental health crisis hotline at 988.
Like 911 and 411 and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
988 is the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline.
Yep.
To be an easy to remember number that connects people who are suicidal or in any other mental health crisis to a trained mental health professional.
Mm-hmm.
As I say here, 988 won't be a busy signal. 988 won't put you on hold.
Mm.
You will get help.
Yeah.
And make it easier for people to get a hold of help.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not necessarily a super easy thing to get help with.
Mm-hmm.
Especially without having to go to, you know, find a therapist or somebody like that that's going to cost a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
When they do fucking call back.
Yeah. Yeah, the Biden administration has invested more than $400 million in beefing up mental health crisis centers and other mental health services to support the 988 system.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully doesn't go the way that, you know, 911 has been of late, where there just aren't enough people and enough support for that stuff. So people are working with, you know, old systems, overcrowded call center stuff where, you know, get too many calls that people can't handle, all that kind of stuff. Especially as you get, you know, cell phones into the mix where
mm-hmm.
it's not as easy to get locations just from those, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, this is good news.
Mm.
Hopefully it helps out a lot of people that are in really bad shape.
Yeah. And our last year of the week is NASA, because this week they revealed the first images from the James Webb Telescope, and they are legitimately pretty incredible.
Yeah.
The one that's most famously going around is the one that shows all the stars and galaxies, and as a friend of mine pointed out, all the little things you see there that don't have spikes coming off of them, those are galaxies. Every single one. Those are all galaxies.
Yeah, they've shared five different images here, or four images and one other thing here, but there's the Carina Nebula. This really amazing looking image that looks like it's mountains and valleys out in space, but it's actually sort of the remains of a nearby young star-forming region called NGC 3324 in the Carina Nebula. I've seen a meme that tries to put Gritty's face in this. It's a big part. called the Cosmic Cliffs. It's about 7 light years high between some of the valleys and the peaks on this image here,
mm-hmm.
Which is a incredible distance there. Let's see, there's Stevens Quintet,
mm-hmm.
which I guess is a thing that was featured in It's a Wonderful Life.
Mm.
The stars there. They revealed Stevens Quintet in a new light. Mm. This enormous mosaic is Webb's largest image to date,
mm-hmm.
covering about 1/5 of the moon's diameter. Paints over 150 million pixels and is constructed mm-hmm. from almost 1,000 separate image files.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so it just shows these four different, or the five different stars.
Mm-hmm.
So only four of them are actually close to each other. There's the one, I think it's on the left side, is actually like a good bit back.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way that we see it. It looks like it's next to it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. There's links on these pages to learn more about each individual image for that. Mm. So if you want to see that, you can look at the full resolution uncompressed images as well. And you can also see the Hubble Space Telescope versions of these. See what's, you know, the upgrade to this new telescope provides in terms of image clarity and detail and all that.
Mm-hmm.
There's the Southern Ring Nebula.
Mm-hmm.
That's a dimmer star at the center of this scene, has been sending out rings of gas and dust for thousands of years in all directions. Yeah, this reveal the first time that it's a star cloaked in dust kind of thing. Yeah, it looks really nice. It's about 2,500 light years away for that. And then there's WASP 96b, which is a, I think, one of the first planets we detected with the Hubble that seemed to have water on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, analyzed numerous exoplanet atmospheres over the past two decades, capturing the first clear detection of water in 2013. Webb's immediate and more detailed observation marks a giant leap forward in the quest to characterize potentially habitable planets beyond Earth, as it captured the distinct signature of water along with evidence for clouds and haze in the atmosphere surrounding this hot, puffy, gas giant planet, orbiting a distant sun-like star. So yeah, it reveals the presence of specific gas molecules and tiny decreases in the brightness of the precise color of lights. All kinds of that. And yeah, the big one is called SMACS-0723.
Mm-hmm.
That is sort of the big grand picture of the deepest and sharpest image of the distant universe to date. It has thousands of galaxies in it, including the faintest objects ever observed in the infrared.
Mm-hmm.
Have appeared in Webb's view for the first time. And it covers a patch of sky approximately the size of a grain of sand held at arm's length by someone on the ground. That's the amount of space we're seeing in this one image.
Yeah.
Which is nothing. But this is the one that Biden got to unveil during a White House event on Monday. So people are doing memes on this one all the time. I think somebody like took the image like, this isn't a picture of space. This is one of those marble countertops. It's a black and all the specks in it.
That was funny.
All that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Putting, you know, Star Wars, you know, the Death Star in there, the, what was it, the mirror thing from Superman 2?
Oh, God.
Floating away into this image.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Okay, well, with that, we are now moving on to proper show proper, the main meat of the show. And the first story we've got here is that the medical examiner for Jalen Walker, the gentleman who was running away from police and was shot by just a lot of times, have revealed that, according to their study, he was shot 46 times. Now, originally, the thing was, it was difficult to assess because he had been shot so many different times that it was hard for the coroners to tell what was an entrance wound and what was an exit.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, they figured out that he had 41 entry wounds and 5 wounds from bullets that grazed his body. Yeah, so more than 60 wounds total, but, you know, entrance and exit wounds. You can say that one bullet could cause several different entrance wounds, so.
Yeah, it can.
Yeah, they recovered 26 bullets from his body. And, yeah, let's see, he had several very devastating injuries that would cause death, putting injuries to his heart, lungs, and arteries. And yeah, that's just such an overuse of force for a guy that was running away from you. That you had his vehicle, who had no priors or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just such an overuse of force.
Yeah.
For a nothing, not a nothing situation, but a minor situation.
Yeah.
Because you could easily just tow the vehicle, you know,
Pretty sure they had the dude on camera, too, so they could have put an APB out on him.
And that body cam of him literally just getting out the passenger side of his car and running away.
Yeah.
Then they,
like, you have a clear
ran
shot.
Ran him down to a parking lot nearby and shot him.
Yeah. But, yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, that's that story's going to still be developing. Now for this other story, the U.S. Bureau of Tobacco and Firearms, that's the ATF, now has its first confirmed head in 7 years. Yeah, there was a lot of weird shit that was going on with that. Because the ATF famously has this very controversial reputation in parts of America.
Yep.
Mostly thanks to the absolute, you know, just buster cluck that was the Waco siege.
Yeah.
And just a bunch of other stuff, too. But now they actually have a head, an actual person heading the organization instead of just, I don't know what they were doing up to this point.
They just had, like, a temporary person or whatever. Someone that was a interim, I guess. Mm-hmm. But, wow. Yeah, thanks to two Republicans. That was 46-46, and Susan Collins and Rob Portman of Ohio voted for to approve this. Mm-hmm. So I saw people that were, everyone's like, oh, where are these, you know, two other Republicans that decided not to vote on, you know, running into conspiracy territory of, you know, they didn't want to protect the gun, right to guns and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And messages from some of these local Republican groups that try to get very anti-Semitic with this guy, mm-hmm. saying that he was starting the Jewish junta
mm-hmm.
For this, which is a council of Jewish people that mm-hmm. supposedly would ruin everything for these people.
Oh, right. Yeah, that thing.
Yeah, the cabal.
Yeah, the so-called protocols.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that thing is actually a very clear forgery, and people have known that as far back as 1920. Supposedly, it was created as sort of like a propaganda thing during the reign of, I think it was Tsar Alexander. It's a clear forgery. And there's like a huge paper trail to show that it was, and yet people still fall for it. But yeah. So next up. The next hearing for the January 6th committee that's scheduled, the one that we recently just had, not the one that's coming up, was focused mostly on the former president's messaging to the far right.
Putting out a tweet on December 19th,
mm-hmm.
basically telling people to, come down to the protest
mm-hmm.
at a lot of the groups, Oath Keepers and all that's
mm-hmm.
just gained a fervor to get ready for that date
mm-hmm.
on January 6th. So yeah, that was a big thing, talking about the meeting that was on December 18th with Rudy Giuliani, Sidney Powell, Michael Flynn, Patrick Byrne, former Overstock CEO, which the Overstock Twitter account had to come out and be like, this guy has not been here for a few years now,
mm-hmm.
has divested himself of all stock from the company. Like, we don't have shit to do with him anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, please stop yelling at us to do mm-hmm. something.
That's bad. Yeah. I shouldn't laugh. That's fucking bad that they have to, yeah.
Like, beg distance people to stop themselves as far as yelling at them to,
can.
Yeah, to speak up.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, other White House lawyers also being in this meeting is a version of quote unquote team normal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so against Team Conspiracy, which was everybody else that was reasonable mm-hmm. and rational. So yeah, there you go. They're increasing the number of connections to Trump.
Yeah,
as it relates to all this stuff, but still mm-hmm. Finding like direct commands and that kind of stuff is tougher. But
yeah. And it got a little tougher because apparently they found out that Secret Service had deleted a lot of texts that was happening around that day, and now the panel has subpoenaed the Secret Service specifically for those texts.
Yeah, people keep thinking when you delete texts that they disappear.
No.
For good, which is like, no, they have to keep records of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when it involves federal accounts.
Yeah.
You know, the case that happened with, you know, Hillary Clinton. Where it's like, mm-hmm. yeah, there's a lot of extra work that companies do when it comes to government
mm-hmm.
phones and such that they don't want to delete that stuff because they may need it and they don't want to get in trouble for, you know, not helping out in these kind of probes. So, yeah, they have been subpoenaed to provide these texts and to, you know, figure out what what the Secret Service role was in all of this, because you wouldn't be deleting a bunch of texts and even emails if there wasn't something going on. These are the people that were supposed to be protecting the president and, you know, his cabinet and all that, and some people in Congress. So, yeah, this is just more fuel for the fire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they said they have one more hearing scheduled for Thursday coming up here. The focus on Trump's failure to act to stop the insurrection, just him sitting in the White House for a few hours there while shit was going down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having that party with his kids and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Watching what was going down, which, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But this may be something else they bring into the picture at a later time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they said they've only got the plans for one more show, one more hearing, but they may change that if important stuff comes up.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's see. Next up, the Abbott Nutrition Facility has finally reopened as of July 1st after flooding shut it down for weeks. For those of you who don't know, this is the one of the factories that is heavily involved in producing various nutritional ingredients for baby formula. And because this factory ended up having to shut down, it meant that we had this huge formula shortage for a while.
And then it reopened again. Then they had some heavy rains and flooding that forced it to shut down again
mm-hmm.
for a few weeks here. But yeah, it should be open.
Mm-hmm.
I would think you'd want to build your factory like this to be able to withstand flooding, especially when you're in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
You're surrounded by water on all sides.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for me to suggest what a huge company spends their money on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also, maybe we need to look at this industry and maybe break some of these companies up, because we should not have this few hands being involved in producing an essential product like this.
Agreed.
Well, I think the FDA is trying to get more of the foreign companies involved.
Yeah, that'll help. That'll help, but, you know, we still need a better way to have it, to have a home market. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that this industry is so heavily controlled by just too few hands is what part of the reason we were in this mess in the first place. So,
yeah, it's a bit scary.
Yeah. Not saying it's a bad idea that we, you know, opened it up to foreign markets. That's not necessarily a problem. It's just that, you know, those can only help you so far. But yeah. Next up, a French pharmaceutical company is seeking approval to bring over-the-counter birth control pills to the U.S. Please do. Please, yeah. FDA. Please let this happen.
Yeah, I'm surprised there isn't already over-the-counter pills, because it happens after, like, you know, a certain amount of time for that stuff to the patent open up, right?
Yeah. I know that what we universally call the pill. And I know that there's also Plan B. We need over the counter stuff for this.
Yeah, but this company is looking to bring this over, because I think the pills, generally just prescription only here in the U.S.
They shouldn't be, but they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they are seeking approval from the FDA to bring this over.
Mm-hmm.
Includes progestin only, not estrogen. It's known as a mini pill.
Mm-hmm.
So that would provide, you know, a big change in access, especially if the prices are reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Teresa, did you go on the pill when you were younger?
Yeah, I fucking did.
Yeah,
as soon as I got to college.
So I've always been curious. Doesn't the pill have like some side effects that come with it?
It can. There can be some weight gain for some women.
Yeah.
It can also like some people, depending on the estrogen amount and if they get the actual injectable instead of the pill, there could be some significant side effects to that one. I did that shot for, well, I did once. It was for 3 months, and I hated myself through the whole thing because I was a raging bitch.
I figured it would probably have some hormonal side effects.
It does, and it can also cause some spots on the skin as well. Something akin to freckles, somewhere between freckles and liver spots.
Yeah.
But I was successfully on the pill for, 13 years straight. Mm-hmm. And I'm no worse for wear. Yeah, it was actually a great time of my life because I didn't have to worry about shit. Unless I took antibiotics, and then I did have to worry about shit. because that will render the pill ineffective. Yeah.
Yeah, hoping this ends up happening soon.
It would be great.
There are already some assholes who want to ban contraceptives, period.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I 3 weeks later, after the whole Roe v. Wade thing, and they're trying to make a nationwide ban on abortion. So, we gotta keep an eye on this shit because it is not good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. So, moving on from there, the International Olympics Committee has reinstated Jim Thorpe's gold medals for the 1912 Olympics. Now, there's a bit of a story behind these, and Chris, you can tell it.
So the whole thing with the Olympics has been, you know, these are all amateurs.
Yeah.
Especially in those days where they were much more strict with that, whereas now, you know, professional basketball players and baseball players, hockey players, all that can play in those sports.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't prohibit things to such a degree, but you know, back then it was supposed to be, oh, these are, you know, the people who haven't, you know, done this stuff professionally, which is a very weird thing still to think about.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he was in the 1912 Olympics that were in Stockholm.
Mm-hmm.
Won the Olympic decathlon and pentathlon events, but was... because he had played minor league baseball in 1909 to 1910, earning a reported $2 per game to $35 per week. He was stripped of the medals in 1913 for violating the existing amateurism rules.
Mm-hmm.
The Amateur Athletic Union in the U.S. withdrew Thorpe's amateur status, and the IOC unanimously stripped Thorpe for being a professional.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been sort of a controversial topic for, you know, the past 110 years.
Yeah.
Especially for Native American communities, because he was a member of the Sac and Fox Nation.
Yeah, he was, he was Native.
He was the first Native American to win a gold medal.
Yep.
And after years of lobbying, IOC Executive Committee reinstated Thorpe in October 1982, but said he was the co-champion of those events.
Yeah.
The people that, you know, were second place and ended up getting the golds as a result, but now he has been restored as the sole champion of those events.
Yeah.
And he is he's an athlete that was highly regarded.
Yeah.
Regarded as sort of the best athlete of that, the first half of the 1900s.
Yeah. And he was a fairly all around athlete too, because he competed in several different sports.
Yeah, he played professional baseball with the New York Giants, Cincinnati Reds, and Boston Braves.
Yep.
Played football here with the Canton Bulldogs.
Yep.
Because that's where football started, and those original teams that started around here ended up becoming the high school teams.
Mm-hmm.
So now that is the Canton McKinley Bulldogs.
He also played basketball. Apparently he was a pretty good golfer as well.
Yeah, he's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah, he also took part in the decathlon and the pentathlon as well. Those are where he got his two gold medals. He was the rare example of like a really all around athlete. Those guys are a lot more rare than you would think they are.
Yeah,
yeah, because there's more money in finding the thing that you're best at and specializing in
it. Yeah, like
even the guys that do come up that are, you know, oh, they're going to go for baseball or football.
Yeah.
They specialize in one.
Yeah.
Because their teams are going to pay them enough to not deal with the other one.
Yeah. So, like, what's the last guy that we know of that became really famous for, like, playing multiple sports? You know, Bo Jackson. And that was back in the 80s.
Deion Sanders.
Well, yeah, Deion Sanders as well.
There have been a couple others, but...
Yeah, I mean, I knew. Then you had, you know, Michael Jordan. He
tried.
He tried.
I mean, there's like a whole conspiracy theory about he had to leave because his dad is gambling and they kicked him out for a few years. I don't know how much of that shit is true, but
yeah. But anyway, good that it finally happened.
Yeah.
Anyway, next up, we got a story out of New York City. New York City confused people when their emergency management team put out a nuclear attack PSA.
What the fuck?
Yeah, on their YouTube channel, put out a video called Nuclear Preparedness PSA.
Yeah.
With captions.
With captions.
That is like, okay, this is not a bad idea for a video.
Yeah, I mean, the possibility is always there, but...
Yeah, it's
not exactly at a point where that seems like something that would be imminent.
Yeah, that's a thing where if that was going to happen, obviously we would be trying to, you know, shoot it and neutralize whatever is going to happen there. But
which we absolutely could, because we have we probably have arguably the single most sophisticated anti-nuclear system in the known world.
Yeah, it's called Whopper.
Yeah.
No, but yeah, this thing just had been viewed 500,000 times pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Opens with a narrator saying, "So there's been a nuclear attack. Don't ask me how or why. Just know that the big one is hit. Okay, yeah. So what do we do?" And like has this chart being like, "Get inside fast. Get into a building. Move away from windows." Like, okay, there is questions here. Like, is this hitting like in Manhattan, mm-hmm. or is this hitting in, you know, like somewhere further away where you have time,
mm-hmm.
that everybody isn't just going to be obliterated within seconds. It's like, stay inside, shut doors and windows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, remove clothing and shower with soap and shampoo.
Yeah.
You know, follow media, sign up for Notify NYC. It's like, oh yeah, they're definitely going to do that after a nuclear attack.
Mm-hmm.
Sign up for your fucking text shit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, people obviously got a hold of this and started writing up some tweets about it. Someone here saying, just saw a video about what to do if a nuclear attack happens in NYC, and as someone who lives there, is there something I should know about? Another one here, anyone see that weird nuclear war PSA that NYC put out on what to do if the city is hit with an atomic bomb? Telling people to get inside and take a shower, as if you're not just going to disintegrate immediately. Another one here, me watching the NYC nuclear attack PSA in which the host says, "You got this."
Yeah, then, it's good information from what I've, you know, from what I've read. You get in and you try to get all the fucking fallout off of you that you can, and you stay in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
it's also, it's gotten like Eric Adams out to say that he approved of what the Office of Emergency Management did. And it was all about preparedness and taking steps necessary after what happened in Ukraine, which I don't think any nukes dropped. Not sure what you're talking about, Eric Adams.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they said, "No, I don't think it was alarmist. I'm a big believer in better safe than sorry. This is right after the attacks in the Ukraine. And OEM took a very proactive step to say, let's be prepared."
Hmm.
It doesn't just mean a nuclear attack. It's just any natural disaster. Pack a bag. Know where your medicines are located. These are just smart things to do. Yeah, those are two different things. Natural disaster and nuclear attack.
Yeah. Have none
you
of
can, no one's Terminator. Gonna happen.
It's like, have none of you people seen Terminator 2?
Yeah.
Like, do you know what happens when a nuke falls, right?
Haven't you watched The Hulk?
Haven't you ever watched frickin'... Well, probably haven't watched Barefoot again, but that's a pretty good idea there, too.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, that happened. And all right, so that's all... that gone aside. Now we're on to the entertainment portion of the show. First thing we got here, we all know the new Beavis and Butthead movie came out recently. Well, now we've got a new trailer for the new Beavis and Butthead, period.
The yep. show.
Yeah, the show.
That is starting August 4th on Paramount Plus.
Mm-hmm.
I guess just called yep. Mike Judge's Beavis and Butthead.
Mm-hmm.
Which just seems to focus more on just the shenanigans of the two dumbest people on television.
Yep. I mean, he's not wrong.
Hey, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, like where they somehow are climbing up a ladder to get up on top of a roof and then the ladder falls over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fun stuff like that. So, yeah. That'll be out here in a few weeks.
Mm-hmm. So, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we recently got a trailer for Rob Zombie's The Munster.
I don't know what the fuck is happening in this trailer. It's so all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to see like 2 minutes of a scene.
Yeah.
Because it feels like an old trailer. Like the way they used to make trailers were just bopped around to random shit and tried to have some narrator talk over this, which is Lily in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Where she's like talking about trying to find love and is searching for Herman Munster
mm-hmm.
for some reason. And then, yeah, like, he's just all weird in this, and I don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's just, I don't know.
Mm.
I want to like it, because I like the show. The show's great.
Yeah.
But I don't know what they're going for here. Is it, you know, like a modern like spin on this, like a, you know,
mm-hmm.
Trying to think of something recent that tried to do this, but I like the Brady Bunch kind of thing, the way they did that, where it's like, here's these weirdos from the 70s, but they're in the 90s
mm-hmm.
after Nirvana went big, mm-hmm. dealing with that, somehow trying to be like, you know, those characters were in the show, but in the 90s. And it's like, I don't know. I have no idea. Seems like this could just be a really bad movie.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. And finally, last but not least, we got a new trailer for Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, the upcoming Amazon Middle Earth show. And whatever you do, don't read the comment section. It is a cesspool of reaction.
Oh, boy.
Well, you're saying nerds are mad about their new nerd show?
Yeah.
The one that they're making? Like,
yeah.
It's not like they're rehashing any old stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's out pretty soon, September 2nd, so.
Mm-hmm.
They only got a month and a half to complain.
Yeah.
Before they start mm-hmm. complaining about what's actually in the show.
Yeah. I hate nerds.
They ruin everything.
Yeah. Especially the things I love. Because these people do not have lives. You know, they don't have families. They don't have really hobbies. They've basically based their entire lives and personality around bullshit like this.
It's weird. No wonder
these fuckers can't get laid. But I do believe we've got ourselves a show, folks. Yes, we do. We got ourselves a show. All right, so. With that, I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you've got a question, comment, or something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or any kind of podcast aggregator you can. So we are going to go ahead and wind it down there. As always, our thoughts are with the people of Ukraine and Russia. We hope that a peaceful and equitable end will be reached soon. Also, as always, even though we are more or less at a point now where it's not really a pandemic anymore, numbers are going up in some mm-hmm. parts of the country. So if you have not yet been vaccinated, we do highly encourage you to do so. And if you are vaccinated but feel like maybe you need a booster of some kind or think that's just something you need to do, don't hesitate. They're very easy to get a hold of. And yeah, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up here. Join us next week for more bullshit, and we will see you all guys there. Later, folks.